Hi, this is Mel, and I'm watching the Cubs lose from a rooftop, but you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you, Mel. Still waiting for that Tinder date after all these years. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. It's great to be here with you today for show number 1023. And what we do here on the program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. The great Bob Ferguson is our engineer on duty today in the WGN Radio studio. And we've got a great show for you today. There is a lot of history in Chicago, and I've talked about a lot of history as it relates to Chicago here on the show, but never through the lens of bricks. Yes, looking at Chicago history through bricks, there is a new book out right now, and that is what it talks about, looking at Chicago history through bricks. And so we will hear from the author of that book. Also, there is a data center, this quantum and microelectronics park going in on a former steel mill site on the south side of Chicago, and it's being touted as a giant economic development for the south side. But many residents in that area don't agree, so we will hear from one of those residents on the show today. It's Memorial Day weekend. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, hopefully grilling out. And this is kind of like the, I guess, unofficial start to summer. And so because school is winding down and as a teacher full time, I'm feeling that too, feeling pretty good. So are my kids. My youngest son, Joey, is 8 years old. He's finishing up second grade, and he is here with me right now because he's so excited about summer. What's up, Joe?
Hi.
You seem like you're pretty excited because summer's on the horizon here.
Yep.
What do you plan on doing this summer?
Playing basketball outside.
Playing basketball outside. You do love to go outside. So you'll be doing a lot of that. And I know you're excited to play baseball. You'll be doing a lot of baseball this summer. So that's exciting, right? What's your favorite position to play?
First base and pitcher.
Say it into the microphone.
First base and pitcher.
There it is. That's how this works. You got to talk right into this thing here. First base and pitcher. So that's exciting. And, you know, a lot of people right now might be listening to this and thinking, what should I do in the summertime? The weather's starting to get a little nicer. Do you have any advice for people what they should do, Joey?
You should go to the pool.
You should go to the pool. You like to swim. You're pretty crazy when you swim, in a good way, I think.
Oh, yeah. You should put a lot of sunscreen on because it's going to be really sunny.
That's the plan. It's going to be really sunny. Got to work on that tan, right, my man?
Yep.
All right. Well, you're excited about summer. Are you excited about the show today?
Yeah.
Bricks? The history of Chicago through bricks, right?
Yep.
That's something that you always think about, huh?
Yeah.
Are you just saying that to be nice?
No.
No? You really think about bricks a lot?
Yeah.
Okay. The mind of an 8-year-old. That's awesome. All right, Joey. You know what? I always thought my mom was the number one fan, but it turns out looks like you're the Outside the Loop super fan. So it's radio, but that's okay. He's dancing up and down right now and he's smiling. All right, well, on with the show. It's a good one today. Summer, right around the corner. Here we come.
Bye.
Chicago history is really cool. Here's a question. Have you ever thought of that history through the lens of bricks? Well, earlier this week, I met up with someone who does. This is what it sounds like. It's busy time here outside of the Ridgeland Green Line stop at the corner of Ridgeland Avenue and South Boulevard in Oak Park, just next door to Chicago. And we're going to hear that Green Line because it's getting to be rush hour here. I'm here with Will Quam. He is an architecture photographer, brick expert.
Yeah.
That sounds weird to say, but that's what you are.
Yes, and one of the only who doesn't actively work in the brick industry making or selling bricks. Yeah.
But you know all about bricks.
I do, yeah.
And well, we should mention your website, brickofchicago.com, and also on Instagram, at brickofchicago. The new book, Fire and Clay, How Bricks Reveal the Hidden History of Chicago. This is interesting stuff. So first of all, bricks, like the stuff that we see all the time in Chicago.
Yeah.
You dive into the history of bricks.
Yeah.
I think this is fascinating to think about here because Chicago, as we know, in 1871, a lot of it burns.
Exactly.
Is that where the story starts with bricks?
In a way, yeah. That's really what makes Chicago such a special brick city, is that it's one of, if not the first American cities that burned down and was able to rebuild almost entirely out of brick, because humans have been making bricks by hand for 2,000 years. And so many cities burned down, they wanted to use brick, they couldn't because they just didn't have enough brick, because the best hand-making brick maker can make about 3,000 bricks a day. But when Chicago burns down, the first really successful brick machines have come to Chicago and can now produce 30,000 an hour. And so Chicago is in a position to finally rebuild with brick. And we're also really lucky that underneath our feet, still today, is just tons and tons and tons and tons of clay that's perfect for making bricks.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how does one go about making bricks? I mean, I think it's something that we see all the time in Chicago and Chicagoland, but how do you make it?
Yeah, you scoop it up out of the ground. You need to grind it. You need to sift it. You need to get it into the right consistency, right plasticity. There's binders and additives. You can't just use raw clay. That's going to be way too brittle. The great thing with Chicago clay is it had a really perfect mix. The downside it had is that it's full of stones and pebbles that make show, you know, little bleachy spots across the surface, and really variable levels of mineral. So one batch comes out yellow, another batch comes out red. So while we were able to make an enormous amount of bricks, those bricks were considered to be the ugliest bricks in the entire world by Chicago architects.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there is such a thing as a Chicago brick.
Yeah, it's called a Chicago common brick. Because when we talk about brick, there's what's called face brick, which is nice brick. So that's the brick you see when you look at the front of a building. And we didn't make any of those here. So when you look at the front of a building in Chicago, you're looking at brick imported from somewhere else. And then common brick is the brick that actually holds it up. And that's what we made here in Chicago. That's what you see when you look around the back, the alleys of our building. So everything that's on the front of a building in Chicago, we imported. And that meant we were really adjusting to fashion. As fashion changed, the kind of brick people wanted changed. And you can look at a building, or I can look at a building after 10 years of no hobbies, and tell when it was built based solely on the kind of brick that's on that building.
So you can actually trace the history of Chicago through brick. Like, you can know if by looking at a specific type of brick what era we're talking about, or when this building was constructed.
Exactly. And the really cool thing of looking at a city as big as Chicago is you get these pockets that you can tell developed at the same time because they have the same brick. So Pullman, Lincoln Park, they use the same red brick. Beverly and Westridge, they have the same 60s brick details and sort of these blocks of color. You know, South Shore, Rogers Park, the same 20s brick and terracotta. You can create connections across the city solely based on the brick.
That's amazing because, and I've talked about this before, you know, I think sometimes in Chicago we think about these different neighborhoods as being so different. And certainly there are some economics and history that go into this, but you're saying that the stuff, the brick that you can see in Rogers Park at the tippy top of the city, and then in South Shore on the other end, it's the same stuff.
And the same goes for, you know, in Lincoln Park, in this era of red bricks, they were using it to build mansions with incredible molded brick details to create, you know, details that were meant to look like cabinetry and fine woodwork. And then those same bricks were being used in a much more restrained way to make workers' housing in Pilsen. But it's the same brick, just applied differently.
Personally, why are you so fascinated with bricks? I mean, I think history of Chicago is fascinating, and there are lots of angles you could approach it from. And architecture is one of those, of course.
Yeah.
But why brick for you?
This is a really good question. That is, so the answer is, I never intended to do this. I moved to Chicago to teach theater. I taught middle school theater as what's called a teaching artist. So I would go all over the city and the suburbs teaching after school classes or in school classes. I've always loved architecture. I grew up in St. Paul, Minnesota, which is amazing architecture, but it's small. And then coming to Chicago and going all over the city, you just can't help but see the bricks. And what I really started to notice was you get the exact same building built side by side, same structure, bay window, everything, but no two look alike because they have different brick. That the brick was the thing that made the buildings different. And I found that very interesting. So I then started noticing that, well, they're not all just red rectangles. There's different colors and textures and patterns. So I started taking pictures and people started asking me questions. And I love to dive down a rabbit hole. And as someone who taught middle school theater, I love a challenge. I like to say that if I could get a middle schooler to be honest about their emotions, I can get anybody to be interested in a brick.
That's a really good way of looking at it, I suppose. And we'll get into it more about what you do with the tours, but you then, something inside of you said, hey, I want to bring this to the masses. I want to teach people history, but from this very, very unique angle.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's something that surrounds us in Chicago every second of every day that you so easily ignore because it just becomes wallpaper. You know, I had a great turn of a phrase I wrote in the book that we are missing the trees for the forest.
Yeah.
There's all this great detail there. And so it is the sort of thing, once you're able to start to get people to notice it just a little bit, they see it everywhere. And then it allows them to engage a little deeper with the city, with their neighborhood, and then also take those same things they learned in one part of the city, somewhere they might live, and go to an entirely different part of the city. I can drop into any part of the city and see amazing brick and explore and appreciate it, which I think is a really wonderful thing to be able to give to other people too.
So the thing that we're talking about here is kind of, let's walk around with our eyes wide open. Yeah. Let's look around at some of these buildings, maybe the buildings that you walk by all the time, and think about the history of the brick and why the brick looks the way that it does.
And then that becomes an opening often to asking more questions of, you know, why, if, you know, is this building maybe from a different era than the others? Or why is there a gap here? Or why was it designed this way? Is it strange in some way? And, you know, what I get into on the tours is then, once you can start noticing that one thing, you can start noticing all these other things and dive down all these little rabbit holes that explore and create more appreciation and understanding of why the city is the way that it is.
Let's talk about those tours. So your website is brickofchicago.com. It's singular, so brickofchicago.com.
In 2017, somebody made a parody Instagram account with the plural bricks, but they haven't done anything with it for a really long time.
So that's why you have Brick of Chicago.
I never intended this to become anything, so I probably should have picked Bricks of Chicago. But I picked Brick, and now I'm stuck with that.
Well, hey, you know what? We'll publicize it. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. Brickofchicago.com. You have all kinds of tours, walking tours, also now bike tours. Yeah. Tell us about what you're doing here.
So I do tours of 12 different neighborhoods all over the city. Each neighborhood I pick because it tells a different story of Chicago history, of brick history, and I try to help people see the way the built environment reflects history. So, you know, I do an Old Town tour. And Old Town has a lot of really spectacular, that red brick, very, very beautiful Lincoln Park style architecture I mentioned before. And then a lot of really cool mid-century stuff from when the rehabbers had come in and started fixing these buildings up and the new money came in. And then we walk on Larrabee. And Larrabee is suddenly this very different area because it was the boundary between working class Lincoln Park in the 60s and the new Old Town, and it was clear cut by urban renewal to create this divide that you maybe would never pay attention to if you're just trying to walk and get through it as fast as you can. Or I do an Oak Park Austin bike tour because Oak Park and Austin were part of the same town for a lot of their history.
Right.
And had a really parallel paths for a long time. But one gets an enormous amount of attention and appreciation, and the other one gets less. But you can see a lot of these same things in both. And then there's certain really interesting things, like You know, in Austin, the famous architect was Frederick Schock, who designed a lot of these famous mansions on Midway Park that are still there in incredible condition. In all of Oak Park, he only designed two buildings. Because there was this great tension and rivalry between the two towns that, you know, you can still see today in the way things were built 100 years ago.
That's amazing. I think, you know, here we are standing technically in Oak Park, but thinking of all of the things in common that this place has with Chicago, which is just down over there, right?
Especially we're on what, the east side of Ridgeland, and this is, you know, the east side of Oak Park that in the 70s was, people were terrified, oh gosh, it's gonna fall apart like Austin. And it was really interesting as researching for the tours, seeing the ways in which people in both places fought to create integrated, successful, well-funded, well-educated communities, and the ways in which they both succeeded and the ways they both failed. Some of them similar, some of them different. But I've met a lot of people through the tour who live on this side of Oak Park, who Oak Park definitely, we call it, sell ourselves, you know, this very progressive place, who when they bought 10, 20 years ago, were told, don't buy anything on the east side of Oak Park. So there's still a stigma there at times that people want to forget exists. And so anything that can be done to break down that barrier and see how much connection all parts of both places have is great to me.
And even areas that are technically outside of Chicago that are not Oak Park, I mean, you have a lot of influence when it comes to other places. That guy was going fast.
Yeah.
You think about, like, neighborhoods that are adjacent to Chicago that still, you can go to those, and, I mean, you think about, you know, Park Ridge is right next door to Chicago. And
Park Ridge.
All kinds of bricks up there.
Well, the original name of Park Ridge was Brickton.
Park That's
Ridge.
Right.
Yeah, Brickton, Park Ridge, produced some of the first face bricks, those nice bricks for Chicago, and they called themselves Brickton for that reason. But then as they slowly ran out of clay and they decided to pivot, and they changed the name. But yeah, throughout the whole Chicago region, you'll find all these same things and a lot of those same parallels, as you'll see in Chicago.
And we can go to brickofchicago.com to sign up for tours. We just want to mention that. And Will, while you're here, I mean, we're standing next to the Ridgeland L stop, the green line here in Oak Park, and we're next to some brick. This looks nice. This is like a turquoise teal kind of color?
Yeah, it's like a seafoam glazed brick. Glazed brick, you know, it's got the surface like a tile, but it is a solid full brick. And glazed brick was incredibly popular in the 1960s. So you could tell this station was rebuilt in the 1960s. Same thing goes for the other ones along this stretch of the green line here in Oak Park, or, you know, even more familiarly, the blue line stations that sit in the middle of the Eisenhower are all colors of glazed brick, white, blue, yellow. And it was really popular for two reasons. One, it's this bright pop of clean color in an era that is kind of reacting to the obsession with steel and glass modernism. People like steel and glass modernism, but it can be a little too sterile. So glazed brick adds this beautiful, smooth, colorful look to it. And glazed brick, it's really easy to clean.
Yeah, it is very smooth,
and
exactly,
it's got this enameled surface like a bathroom tile, and for that same reason they put it on here, because people are going to be walking by it, smoking, spitting, you know, tagging, and it's right. A lot easier to clean than if it was an older, like a 1920s rough texture brick, which actually across the corner from the station is a wonderful commercial building from the 1920s. It's got a newly opened cafe in the corner, an architect's office, and it's a yellow brick from the 20s that has a rough texture to it. And it's a building that before last year was just absolutely stained dark and gray, mm-hmm. because it's right by the train.
Right.
And these diesel engines, you know, coal-fired power plants throughout the city, all those nooks and crannies that got in there and darkened. But what happened last year is Elements Architecture, a really great Oak Park architecture office, bought the building, and they cleaned everything. And that they went so far as even to taking these big decorative panels called terracotta off of the top of the building, put them on the roof, and then scrubbed them with a preservation cleaner, put it all back on. And now it shines bright and yellow like it would have when it first went up in the 20s. And it's never going to get that dark again, because thankfully we're not burning so much coal and diesel out into the open air.
How are we doing now? I mean, you talked about what is left behind because of this history of bricks in Chicago and Chicagoland. But when it comes to new construction and what we're using, you know, I am guilty of saying, man, it looks like you go to some of these neighborhoods, and I used to live in Wicker Park, and it's like, all we know how to do is build glass and sort of steel structures and very not warm.
So the two things are, one, we go through phases. There's phases in popularity in construction. And for the last 15 years, glass has been really sexy and cool and modern and sleek. If you go back to the 80s and 90s, it was a lot more about brick and a lot more about these enclosed spaces using a lot of brick. The other thing is, all the brick you see today being used on new buildings is all just decorative brick. Since the 70s, brick has not been used as a structural building material.
Wow.
So this 90s condo building across the street here, that brick, all this brick you see, is just decoration. The structure of this building is coming from things like concrete, or more often even wood. Wood is so cheap and now can be made fireproof through various treatments. And so in the United States, that's what we use, and the brick is just a shell. But in Chicago, because we have such this legacy of brick architecture, and I found in researching for my book, with a renter or a home buyer, such a tie between this idea of value, luxury, money, and brick, we still use a lot of brick in our buildings.
Which is, like you say, kind of a definitive note of Chicago, yeah. Because we're still doing that. It's not necessarily happening everywhere. So you mentioned your book. Again, it's called Fire and Clay. Tell us about what's in that book.
It's the full history of how brick has been used both as a building material, but also a design material, and also a material crafted and laid by labor throughout the 150 years of Chicago, and goes into all the different ways people have used brick to create expressions across buildings, and the different lives brick has had as a material trying to be stone, or trying to be wood, or trying to be fabric, or trying to be just something insane and colorful, or tile, or now oftentimes trying to look like metal.
Right.
But at the same time, it's a way of giving you a lens through which to better explore and appreciate the city. That it's not just a dry history of these things, it's a way to appreciate all the things that make up Chicago that are clay, rectangles, and also a lot of other shapes too, turns out.
That's amazing. Well, I think this is such a cool way to look at the history of Chicago. And we can all go to the website, brickofchicago.com, and we can get the book through the website. Where else can we get the book?
The book is published by the University of Chicago Press, so it's available on online retailers. It's at a bunch of bookstores all around the city. On my website, you will find the calendar of events. I'm going to be doing a lot of events around the book across the city through the summer and the fall, too, including an opportunity, if you're interested, to learn how to lay some brick with the International Bricklayers and Allied Crafts Union Training Center and the union trainers there. So a lot of cool stuff happening there. But find it at your local bookstore all over the city and enjoy it.
That's fantastic. Well, brickofchicago.com is the website. Will Quam is he's the brick guy. He's a brick historian, brick architecture photographer, author of the book, Fire and Clay.
I'm the only one you know.
That's right.
Nobody else is broken in this way.
I love that. Well, and we're just talking bricks. And, you know, now I'm going to just notice more bricks, I think, walking around the area here. Will, thank you so much for talking today.
Thank you so much for having me. Enjoy the bricks.
Last July, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker formally announced a new project, the Illinois Quantum and Microelectronics Park, also known as IQMP. It is situated on a former steel mill site. The IQMP is set to become the nation's first home to a utility-scale quantum computer, a leap that could make Illinois the Silicon Valley of quantum. So what is quantum computing? Well, it uses the rules of quantum physics to let computers explore many possible solutions at once, which can make certain problems much faster to solve than with traditional computers. The state broke ground on the project last September, and of the $1 billion raised for the project, about $700 million comes from public money. The park is touted as a potential economic engine for the South Side and has the support of many state leaders, but not everyone is on board. Akeel Spencer is a resident of the 7th Ward on the South Side and is a member of South Side Together. That is a local community organization. The website's southsidetogether.org, and Akeel is here with us today to talk about what's going on in his neighborhood. Akeel, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate you.
You got it. So, all right, for those of us not from that area, I said that this site is a former steel mill, but can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what was there, the status of it, the situation here, and why this area is kind of now the spotlight?
Where the building is planned on being built, like you said earlier, the land was contaminated. It was a steel, like the name Steelworkers Park. They used to build a bunch of metal there. And so the remnants of that left over time, chemicals, lead, I think there's about like 20 other ones that can cause cancer and other diseases. And that's exactly where they're digging to and building this. So not only is it harming people health-wise, it's harming people along the sides of the uses of water, their bills, utility bills. It's overall a lot of cons to this this being built.
And that kind of leads into what I want to ask you about your concerns here. You mentioned some of the issues with the soil being contaminated because it was a steel mill site for so long. And that's kind of juxtaposed with the this whole project, this IQMP. On paper, you know, if you just look at it, hey, this could be a really good thing. But you have been organizing against this project pretty extensively. So you mentioned a few of your concerns, but from a community standpoint, from people on the ground living in this area on the South Side, what concerns do you have about this project?
I think a lot of, and these are not just mine, but many people that we've talked to, we've gone door to door. One being this project was not explained, nor the first time I found out about this was from South Side Together leaving a flyer on my door. So no one like JP Britzker or the mayor or our alderman told us about this. So it's kind of almost like it was done underneath the rug overnight. And so not only not being informed about this, such a huge project that our money, our taxpaying money is being used for, is being put right next to the lake on the south side of Chicago that will affect, like you said, the water. Is the amount of water that it uses is thousands of gallons that most in other places where these facilities are built affects not only the water pressure, but the water quality. These are issues that are going to directly affect the neighbors and my neighbors and me as well. So the list, like I said, the list goes on with all the cons. Not only is it being built on the grounds where it can harm people's health, the water is being affected. It's going to affect property taxes as well. That's already a hurt and an area that's almost becoming gentrified will just expedite that as well. And then you also have the energy costs that this will take, I believe 200,000 houses, the amount of energy to power this one building. So that's going to offset and be handed off to the neighborhoods again, which will, many of our residents are already burdened with financial issues. So it's again, just a overall a bad thing, a bad idea to even put this here.
I want to go back to something. So you were talking about some of your concerns, and I think those are absolutely real concerns. But the question about people in the community and the fact, you know, that like for yourself, you found out about this project because South Side Together left a flyer on your door, and other neighbors, it sounds like in your community, had no idea that this was going to happen because nobody included you in the process. So I'm just thinking about the transparency of it all. It sounds like that the people who this could impact, you know, just directly because of where this thing is being built, we're left out of the process.
man, completely left out of the process. And it's kind of ironic because we actually, not only did we canvassed and we canvassed the community and told many people about it, we got 300 signatures to allow us to have a referendum to be put on the ballot to ask if residents wanted this, and the residents would be able to actually voice their opinion and let it be known. And again, it was a referendum, so it wouldn't change anything. This is, again, just to spread awareness and to let the community have a voice, the residents to have a voice. And like you say, to actually have an impact and matter. And surprisingly, well, not surprisingly, but lawyers were paid, and they were the reasoning the referendum did not go through was that the language was too was not concise and can be confused. And it's just almost like a slap in the face when you're trying to talk and then you're being silenced again by the companies, J.B. Pritzker, the mayor, all these things. It's almost like you're a community, like you don't matter. But again, we're not going down without a fight. We're going to City Hall. We're getting more people. We're telling people what they can do. And we're just gaining more power and traction.
Let's talk about that. Earlier this week, I know that some folks from Southside Together went to City Hall to try to spread awareness about this potential quantum and microelectronics park that's being built on the South Side. Tell us about that experience. This was a few days ago on Wednesday. What happened?
So we showed up to City Hall. This is the most people we've had. We showed up to City Hall. We had all our speeches ready. We were able to do our press conference again in the beforehand. And this shout out also June 17th, we'll be right back again to spread the awareness and let this be known. We just want to make decisions in our own community, and we want the control back. We weren't able to actually speak. Again, it's a lottery system when you go downtown the City Hall to speak. But again, that's not stopping us, not at all. It's not a setback. If anything, it was more encouraging to see that more people are gathering and understanding that we do have a voice and we are a community and we don't allow these things just to happen.
So you went to City Hall. Have you received any sort of responses from elected officials who are maybe thinking about this, or are they telling you, hey, we'll get to you eventually, or are they just ignoring you?
The silence is astounding, completely ignoring, not acknowledging. And I think it's one of those things where they are fully aware, and they are fully aware of our presence and what we are doing, but ignoring completely. And again, that's all. We're not planning on going away. We're just planning on getting louder. We're getting more people. People that showed up to the facility were actually surprised. I mean, that showed up to City Hall were surprised that we had so many numbers, saying that they didn't think that there was an actual group of community trying to fight this. And this isn't the first city that this has been done in this. And so I think rallying around that and that idea concept, I think will eventually get us enough public notoriety where we cannot be ignored.
And isn't this amazing? I just think about the history of Chicago and that area, specifically the Southeast Side, that has been really ground zero for a lot of environmental justice issues. And I feel like over the years, you know, on this show, I'll just speak locally here. I've talked to people from that community who have said, hey, we're being ignored and this stuff is going on in our community. It's hurting us. It's pollution. We don't want it. And whoever's in office, I feel like just steamrolls ahead and says, no, economics, it's going to be okay. Even when the residents of those communities are saying, hey, stop. And this is another example of that, isn't it?
100%. And I think that's, again, why we're fighting so hard, because tired of just being ignored, or tired of just being put on the back burner, or tired of after the fact trying to deal out with the fallout that has happened. And I think we're getting ahead of it. I think the money that they're using for this could be put in so many different ways in the community. We can talk about anywhere from something as small as potholes that are been there for years. Mm-hmm. We can talk about sanitation systems where, like, I don't have to wake up in the morning and smell the sewer because of the lack of piping or the ventilation or however. But it's so much money that we could use to invest back into the community, whether, again, that's social programs for the kids or social programs for jobs. It's our taxpayers' money, and this is not what we asked for. So I think that's the main thing where we're trying to make an impact, and we are making an impact to fight against this.
you talked about how you went to City Hall and you're trying to drum up support. You also mentioned that June 17th, you're going back to City Hall. So there's that. What else is on the horizon here as you try to fight this quantum and microelectronics park that's being built on this steel mill site?
So we have weekly events. We have phone banking that we do every week, usually on Thursdays, where we call and we tell people in the community about it. We also have like the canvassing that we do on Fridays and Saturdays, where we kind of go out door to door with a paper and we explain what's happening just to inform people. And we again have almost, I would say, sessions to kind of teach others and people how to organize and how to grow and what our main goal is, again, to rally around. And all the information can be found. We have a social media page and we have a website, I believe.
Southsidetogether.org is that website. So all of the information can be found on that site. And the fight continues because this is, again, an issue of community. And people in the community are saying, hey, we got to think twice about this. And it seems like the city is, as you say, Akhil, just ignoring the voices of the people. And again, southsidetogether.org is that website. So we will keep an eye on this. And Akhil, good luck with everything. Akhil Spencer is a resident of the 7th Ward and a member of Southside Together. That is a local community advocacy organization. Akhil, thank you so much for taking the time today and keep doing what you're doing.
Appreciate you, Mike. Thank you so much.
And that will do it. Outside the Loop show number 1023 is done. Thank you so much for listening to the show today. Thanks, of course, to Bob Ferguson for all of his engineering magic in the WGN Radio studio. Have a wonderful weekend, 3-day weekend. I love that. And enjoy your week. I'll talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.